Blog Talk Radio.
Lady Rhonda Everett.
No, that makes it sound like a weird family.
But speaking of weird family, welcome to this episode, which is called Black Family Entrepreneurship. Can black families work together successfully?
Before we get started, can we do an on-air shout out to our very own Anshe Hall Everett? Happy birthday!
Happy birthday!
I'm not going to join that.
Yes, happy birthday!
Happy birthday!
Thank y'all so much for that.
You're about to hear our wild adventures from Tallahassee from this year. But Shavonda, you freaked me out for a second because I thought you were about to ask us to, call for a prayer.
Before we start the show.
I thought you were reliving your moments when you did that play and your one line was, "Can we all pray?"
That was so long ago. But we forgot to pray. I still remember the line.
She got a lot of praise for her that, you know, that role right there.
Oh,
her
man.
Name is
so
Taylor.
Yeah, we've been working together
play.
For a minute. But, just, you know, I want everybody out there to know that today's show is about Black Family Business Entrepreneurship. So we're going to go just a little bit behind the scenes. Of course, we've done a weekly article, and the topic this week was on working together in family, so we'll talk more about that. But if you want to join us, by all means, please call in 646-915-9198, 646-915-9198, and we would love to hear your opinions about this topic and hear some of your opinions about what we're going to be saying about this topic. So that'll come a little later, as some of you may already know.
All right, get with it.
We've been starting this format of just talking about some I don't want to say current events because it makes it sound like overly professional, but things that we felt it needed to sort of highlight, right, and have like broader conversations on. And for some strange reason, it's been like Kanye West the last couple of weeks, but it's not Kanye West this week, I promise you.
I was kind of missing that, but go ahead.
So although Anshe does have a surprise for you later with that, so. And also encourage you all to check us out on the Intimacy and Color page. If you do that, you can follow sort of these topics and also, you know, contribute there. We'll read your comments if you don't want to call in. But I was going to say this last week because I just thought this was amazing when I saw this. I think it was been 2 weeks ago. And Rhonda, I think I shared this with you too. But you said, man celebrates 108th birthday and 82 years of marriage to a 104-year-old wife.
I don't know. I don't remember that.
So, I mean, it's posted on the Intimacy and Color page, but I just thought it was important to, you know what it was? So, Shavonda, I sent you a picture this morning. Did you get it?
Probably. You sent it through text?
Yes. It was a picture from Anshe sent. To
the
you
tree?
And me. Yeah.
Hold on. Now I'm getting caught not checking my text messages on. Oh yeah, with the one with the no ass.
Right. Oh no. I mean that was something else. But anyway, the tree. Then we sent you a picture, but we were talking about using that for you know, for writing a children's book. So Siobhan and I were talking about ways we can make that happen. And so that was an example, but it made me think about something that happened today. So if you don't know, Anshe and I were in Tallahassee all weekend.
Yeah, we were.
We were seeing his family. And there was just a lot of inspiring stories. So I kind of let Anshe just sort of share, and I did not tell you what the purpose was. The boy was your father riding the bike.
Oh, you want me to tell that story?
Yeah.
All right, so we were in Tallahassee, and there's a town that touches Tallahassee called Havana. And so my parents, when they met in Havana, Florida. And then my mom ended up moving to Tallahassee with, you know, her parents and everything like that. They're still in high school. So my father, what he used to do is get on his bicycle and ride his bike from Havana onto Tallahassee. And, you know, and where my mom was staying was like in near close to the downtown Tallahassee, so he really had to, you know, do a nice bike ride. But there was that one time where he has an area where it's like a rest stop. And it was like an old little small airport, I guess for like private planes or what have you. But anyway, one time he's riding on his bike. A car hits him while he was on his bike. And so they get out of there, ask him if he's okay, ask him if there's anything they can do for him. He said, I just need y'all to take me to Tallahassee so I can see my girlfriend. And so, you know, just like those type of stories, you know, when I was in Tallahassee, it just felt good to ride and just like to think about that, because I remember my mom telling me those stories, and then to have my dad when being in the car with him, and he would ride by and also share those stories. So, you know, I just like to hear that.
So it just made me think of the story did about like how I think important it is for us to hear stories about like our parents and them being in love, because I think a lot of what we hear can be oftentimes really negative. So
yeah.
You don't even, you're like, how did I get here? There was never a relationship.
Right.
But I think it's important just to be able to hear that. And Ron, I'm not sure what your thoughts are about that and how you showcase that with your daughter.
Oh, I don't have those stories. I don't have that kind of story. You were there, so that would be really sweet.
I mean, it was romantic in the beginning, you know, or whimsical.
I don't think it was. In the beginning, I would say the beginning of the relationship with my daughter's father, what I remember is that you and mom thought he was good for me because I dated a guy before him who was like 15 years my senior, and we had, felt like we had nothing in common. You're like, this guy's nice, he's quiet, he's, you know, he did poetry, we were really big in spoken word at the time, he was in the same field that I was in, so it made sense. But what I remember the most is feeling like something within me was not really feeling like this guy was my guy. And I remember talking to myself and saying that, you know, feeling like, okay, you're being set up, you're being too picky, you're being, you know, you're doing. And my big lesson has been from that is to just to try to trust myself and not to, you know, when I feel like that, then it's okay to be like, you know, maybe this isn't for me, and not to even need a huge reason. But I guess because at the time I couldn't pick any particular reason, you know. That's a good story.
And maybe that is the love story. Hold on one second. We're turning. Okay. Maybe that is the love story, but I was still thinking, based on sort of like what Arte's story described, and I'm just even looking at this article, that I think it's important for us to be able to sort of see people of color in love. And I think it's something really beautiful even when you see the president, you know what I mean, and his wife, and then you see them together, but to see folks.
You love to see them. They seem so happy.
Yeah.
And like, they fit really well. They really complement each other.
And it can definitely be a model for the rest of us. But so the next story, I don't know if you saw this at some point, Rhonda, either, but Larry Sanders, he plays for the Bucks, because, you know, we talk a lot of sports here.
Okay.
But he's 26 years old, and he quit the NBA to explore his true life path, his purpose. So he walked away from, you know, from millions of dollars because he already recognized that that wasn't going to make him happy. And even though that his dream might not make him money, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That he feels really blessed to be in that position. I just thought it was really beautiful to see a black young man, you know, decide to walk away from that and not be caught up in that.
You know, there was another story about this, and years ago, I mean, the basketball player is no longer, he was killed, actually, but, I remember a story about him. I wish I could figure out his name, where he quit, and he was getting lots of money, and he quit, and the woman that he was in love with, because, you know, as a player, he had all these different women, and she was just like, I'm not putting up with that. So when he quit, he's like, this life isn't for me. It's not, you know, make me happy. He wanted to sail the world with this woman. And he got a boat. He went back and got the woman. And then they went to sail the world by themselves together.
But now he's dead.
I didn't want to tell that part because then I feel like I'm going to be the Debbie Downer. But his brother killed him.
I mean, like, yeah. It was like a moment of silence, too. Like, when you said it, I'm like, oh, now what do I do now?
You know, because I was asking, because I saw the story on TV or something like that. Like, it was like some celebrity concert.
It was like...
Okay, oh, yeah, that's
why.
I wasn't asking,
TV
like...
show.
I wasn't asking, like, now he's dead, you know, and it's sad. I was just, you know, I was asking.
He was on a song or something?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Get out of here.
But I can take a seat of us in a box, black men happen that way. This other article that also got posted, and Sharana, I'm pretty sure I shared this with you, but it said the Native American Council offers amnesty to 240 million undocumented whites.
Yeah.
So I just thought, I mean, like, you know, I think there are people who are going to see this sort of from different ways, but I think it's important that... I think it's important that stuff like this happens, that people have, you know, read stuff like this, because I think it's important to remember, you know, sort of whose country it is. So I just thought it was interesting. It was an interesting article.
When I first thought, I said, well, good for you for wanting to do that. You know, I didn't know if it was a joke at first, but, you know, I'm like, oh, wow. But as I'm reading, I'm like, wow, good for you, you know, wanting to do that. I think that's pretty awesome to do that.
But what about black people? They're going to say, your ass has got to... your ass got to go back where you came from.
No, we didn't come here claiming stuff. That's what that was.
So, the last thing we'll have before our first segment of truth is this this article, right? What we call Family Business. Which you posted on our Urban Socialite.
Yes, sir.
I think it was Friday evening. And so this has a whopping 58 likes.
Oh, you didn't press that pause button for that?
No. But it was an important article for us to do because we all work together, and we really wanted to sort of talk about the behind the scenes of that, because it's not always easy. But the article started from this premise that, you know, like, black families, we sometimes individually figure out how to be successful, but we have a hard time figuring out how to collectively bring success to families. And I think that because we struggle with that we still have so much generational poverty, right, that our cousins inherit. So I think the bottom line is that working together is clearly in our own best interest, but I think we struggle with doing that. And so part of this article is about opening up the conversation for why that is. So.
Oh, you want to start it now? I would just make it real, real brief. I just think that it has come to a level of comfort and privilege, and that we come a lot into our own privilege, and we also come a lot into our own comfort zone with one another. And so that's when we begin to see a lot of things, you know, if they blow up, that's why we begin to see those things begin to blow up.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I would agree. There's definitely comfort and privilege that happens in that. And I also just think that it's about not having a model to work from, you know, like, that, you know, we're all sort of figuring this out as we move along, and I think that you build better systems when you decide it's going to be improved.
Mm.
So it could be a combination of things. I don't know what your general thoughts are, Rhonda.
Well, it makes me think about the whole crabs in a barrel comment, and how when we talked about that comment before, and what was brought up was that, you know, the barrel is not a crab's natural habitat. So, of course, if you put a bunch of crabs in a barrel, they're just trying to survive. That when you think about individual success within families, you know, people are in survival mode, and then they break out and they learn how to think forward or think steps ahead or to strategize to create success. And they're just trying to hold on to that success. So I don't think they're always thinking about, well, how do I – make this a family thing, or build this kind of thinking in the family, because part of it is changing how people think.
And I think
that's not easy to do.
And I think it takes generations to get into poverty, and I think for many folks it'll take generations to sort of get out. Because like you said, it's about changing how you think. But yeah.
It's just a lot of work that's got to be done. And let me tell you, that means you got to have a lot of cocktails to calm you down, too. I'm just joking. So we're going to go to our first segment of truth song, which is a song just to get us hyped and get us going.
Right.
But it's by a good girlfriend, Miss Mary J. Blige, Family Affair. So we're going to play this. Feel free to call us, 646-915-9198. You can also chat with us on Facebook, Intimacy and Cup, COLOUR. Hit us up.
let your body free. Leave your situations at the door. So when you step inside, jump on the floor.
With Aunt Teresa, right? Was it? I think it was with her. And we were talking about, I guess, like,
why we
like
don't have a family business.
You say it again?
It was kind of like, why, if we have such a large, talented family, why wouldn't we have a family business?
Right. But we came to a different conclusion that day, and it wasn't, like about boundaries necessarily. It was, like, it was about capacity or something like that.
And, you know, another part of that conversation, it wasn't just that, why don't we have a family business? Like, why don't we as a family utilize each other for our strengths? And it was more like, we don't know what, we don't even take the time to know what the other person is capable of. I think, you know, and so we miss out on those opportunities to grow our own capacity through a family member because we've never checked to even know what they know.
And I also think that this is going back to what we were discussing earlier, but I think part of my biggest issue is, like, you got to make certain kind of choices that I think that generations ago, they didn't necessarily have those options on the table, right? So, like, you go to college, maybe you make a little bit more money or stuff like that, and it sometimes that does really isolate you, and sometimes you reinforce that isolation. And I think that that's also part of why some of us don't return. Like, I know that there are basketball players who do a lot of great things, but I know there are a lot who don't do anything. And I just always think, like, with all that much money, you know, on one team, like, they could really do some amazing things in their community they come from. But even, like, I even feel like that even we don't trust each other at that level. You know what I mean? Like, when we
right.
when money's not the problem.
Yeah.
I don't think we mind it anymore. I need to speak on this from working with the both of you two. I think mine has been more.
You also come from a family business.
Yeah. But I've seen a lot of, again, when I talked about not knowing when to turn it off. So I just seen when I saw my parents, every time they had a conversation, it was about work. It was always about something dealing with the business. And I don't think they really made much time for each other, you know? So, and also showed up where they didn't make as much time. I know. For us at times, like when we wanted them to be around, you know, it wasn't as much family time there. It was always about the business. And I think, you know, you just have to learn how to turn those things off because you begin to miss out on other opportunities or just even missing out on other moments that could be, you know, more cherishable, that can even bring life and bring happiness to you.
That's true. I think what happens is when you think about empire, like we use that picture for the article, which is really, you know, speaks to what you're saying. When, you know, a family being so involved in the business that a lot of times that is that's the legacy that they want to leave, or that is what's kind of born of them. And it's my brainchild, not necessarily my love child, but this is of me or of us. This is something we create together. And sometimes that gets so big or so much bigger than the two people, because it's what they formed together. It's a result of their union, just like children, probably.
So this thing about seven generational sustainability, can you break it down real quick, Rhonda?
So with seven generation sustainability or seven generation thinking is the concept that there's no decision made without thinking about the impact it's going to have on the seventh generation. So that's about 140 years into the future. And there's a Native American tribe, I can't pronounce the name, Iroquois, I think it is. And so when they would make decisions, in every deliberation, they would consider the impact on the seventh generation, even if it required, you know, having to suffer now, you know, for the sake of the seventh generation. So they were never, they were thinking about the longevity or prosperity of themselves, you know, as a people, but not right in this moment. It's future thinking.
That's amazing.
Wow. Now, as y'all was speaking on that, I just thought about... Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, impoverished thinking, if you think about, you know, some of the characteristics of impoverished thinking, is it's mostly a thinking that's in crisis or right at the moment. It's rarely thinking about the impact on a next generation, or even next week.
Yeah, which brings up, I think, the other issue that planning is probably right under boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's when you begin to set the structure. So as you're planning, what you're doing is you're actually laying the foundation of what the structure is going to be. And from there, that's when you are able to set aside of, you know, when work hours are going to be turned off. And if you don't do that, I feel like you are finding yourself always operating in crises because you're no longer looking at, you're no longer having time to really just sit down and actually plan things out.
And I'm not even specific, and I think you were sort of alluding to this, is that planning for the, like, the family around the business, how the business will go, like, the business plan itself, is like, a lot of people just sort of jump into it. I cut hair. It's not, like, a really a business plan.
Right.
And so I think when you do that, you kind of, you stay micro because you're thinking micro as opposed to macro, which I think generation, you know, thinking in terms of that generation example, would actually do that for folks. So I think that there are boundaries that make it hard for us to work together, but they're also like, we just don't plan, and when we do, we don't always follow through with it.
Yeah. But I just start thinking about me, like, sometimes, like, I have ideas in my head, or, like, for me, I like to sit back and plan and think about things.
Mm-hmm.
What happened is I also
procrastinate. Falls right under planning.
But that procrastination comes a lot from the fear, and I, you know, and so now I'm trying to find a way to plan around the fear or try to find a way to remove the fear, but...
You need a plan for the plan for the plan.
Hello, it's like meeting for the meeting.
Right.
But anyway, yeah.
That's just famous, yeah, meeting for the meeting. Yeah,
I think I have a similar problem, Anshay. Like, you know, I'm very creative. I can think of a lot of ideas. I'm not necessarily one who jumps up and, you know, does everything. I think that finding a balance, and that's why working within a family group is perfect because everybody has strengths and everybody has weaknesses, and being aware of those and being in maximizing on my strengths as opposed to my weaknesses and vice versa. But when you're alone and you're not working in that family, then things just don't get done.
Yeah, that is so true. I also wonder if it's just also, I know we just mentioned around like the fear aspect, but I also wonder, not just the whole fear, but even just the respect factor. Like, do we really have enough respect for one another?
Or do we know what respect looks like? Because we're talking about emotional language now, and I think that many people struggle with, you know, like placing their feelings, understanding them, and then creating behaviors that, that you know, that are, I guess, in line with what their feelings are.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, like, if you're sad, you'll act out like you're mad.
Right.
And those mm-hmm. things will keep you blocked, too. I think, you know, and those are more boundary issues, like you said. Respect.
Ooh. It's just a lot.
It is a lot. And I mean, but the thing is that it's not like people who don't work with family don't have their own slew of issues. I think, you know, things around trust. Like, when you go into a new workspace, it takes you a year before you know you get comfortable. Because every day you're trying to figure out if they're going to fire your ass or
okay.
not.
Okay.
So I think you're trying to figure it out. So it comes with its own... thing, and I think that by working with family, it does teach you patience, you know, and I think it teaches you to be kind. I think it teaches you to be as fair as you possibly can be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if you grow up together, I don't know, like the way your family has, the way our family has, if you grow up together too, that makes it easier because you know people on a deeper level. Like,
yeah, that is true. That is so true. Yeah. So I guess we should go to our next Sing Me the Truth song, which is going to be one that it's a little slow, but you know, I figure it reminds me of our trip to Tallahassee, and just I'll explain more so after the song. But this is Kanye West, Only One.
As I lay me down to sleep, I hear her speak to me. Hello, Mari, how you doing? I think the storm and all the rain, the clouds are moving. I know you're happy, cause I can see it. So tell the voice inside your head to believe it. I talked to God about you, he said he sent you an angel. And look at all that he gave you, yes, for one and you got to. Mm-hmm. You know I never left you, cause every road that leads to heaven's right beside you. So I can say, hello my only one. Just like the morning sun, you keep on rising till the sky knows your name.
Remember who you are. No, you're not perfect, but you're not your mistakes. Hey, 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 hey. Oh, the good, I wish the bad, even on your worst day. Remember I say, hey, hey, one day you'll be the man you always knew you could be. And if you knew how proud I was, you'd never shed a tear, have a fear. No, you wouldn't do that. And no, I didn't pick the day to turn the page. I know it's not the end every time I see her face. And I hear you say, hello, my only one. Remember her not. You got the rubbers, you got love in your hands. And you're still my chosen one. So can you understand? One day you'll understand. So hear me out, hear me out. I won't go, I won't go. No goodbyes, no goodbyes. Just hello, just hello. And when you cry, I will cry. And when you smile, I will smile. And next time when I look in your eyes, we'll have wings and we'll fly. Oh, my only one. Just like the morning sun, you'll keep on rising till the sky knows your name. And you're still my chosen one. Remember who you are. No, you're not perfect, but you're not your mistakes. Hey, 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 hey. Tell Noree about me. Tell Noree. I just want you to do me a favor. Tell Noree about me. Tell Noree.
I can't seem to quite figure out what he says at the end. Like, tell Noree about
it. I don't know who that is. Somebody. That's somebody. So, yeah, that was Kanye West with Only One. And I chose that song because, you know, today's my birthday, and I got to go to Tallahassee for the weekend, as we spoke about. And for those who don't know, my mom passed away when I was about 10 years old, and my granny also passed away about five or six years ago. And so it was my first time coming to Tallahassee. Since the passing of my grandmother, and just because I was just a little nervous and going, so I had to really work through it. But, yeah, it was just cool. I just thought I had a chance to really reflect this weekend and really got to share a lot of good moments with Mike and walk down memory lane with him and share, like, where I grew up, and he got to meet some of the relatives and all that good stuff. So, you know, it was just good just to have that song. It's one of my favorite songs by him. Anyway, Kanye West, you know.
I knew that he would sneak his way into the show. Some way, somehow, Kanye
will find.
He is going to be on our show every Sunday.
But I am curious with you guys about, like, you know, we sort of give these interviews about working together and, you know, saying this, whatever. What do you find a few words? Yeah. What do you find most challenging about working?
Are you who? Just
in general. It doesn't matter. I'm just smiling.
I would say, you know, it's one of the things that's difficult is, I think that we have very strong personalities, and I guess strong-willed as well, but that you know, just trying to be mindful that if I think this direction is right and you think that direction is right, that I don't fight. You know, that I can put it out there. Well, I don't think that this is the right way to go, or I don't think this, but to not fight about it to the extent that there's no direction at all.
That you don't tarnish me.
Right. So that there's like compromise, and you know, and if I feel like something's wrong, I think what I get in my mind is that, well, if it doesn't go, if we go your way and I feel like that's not the right way to go, it will show. So I'm, right. you know, no need to worry about having to press the issue so much, because then you'll be open, you know, to another direction.
I know, for me, I think you're just a very driven individual, so you're always thinking and you're always on the go, and for me, I just like to say calm down, cool, you know, and just take a moment to breathe.
Relax, release
for a moment. And because I find myself getting frustrated, and I just said, if only he would just chill for a moment, he'll be fine. So that's my thing with you. I think that's become the most challenging piece, that you just don't chill. So it gets into my chill time. So as I'm trying to chill, you're bringing up ideas to me. And I just want to have a moment just to divorce myself, just so I can just tap out.
Now you're throwing a Z word around on radio.
Oh, Lord, don't say that.
I think what's most challenging about working with myself is that it's, I guess I just feel like it's, you know, like, attention disorders can really make work difficult for you. So I'll just leave it at that.
Well, what about with me? I guess I'm ready to hear the truth.
I would say that I think this is difficult. Okay, I think that
because I'm trying to
tie it all into a nice, you know.
Shoot talk.
I think that you have, that you generally overcommit yourself and overextend yourself, and I think you also get really frustrated by that, but I think it shows up in other ways, like usually in the home front. And I think that I think that is one of the most frustrating things to sort of manage all the time.
Okay. Thank you. What about you, Lady Rhonda?
I already went. I mean, I don't have any issues working with you. I think that we mostly do article stuff, and it's pretty easy for me. I don't have to, like, have the – like the same kind of interaction that you and Mike have. So I think, you know, I don't know that experience with you. Like, I don't know that. So that's good, I guess, because we have a lighter.
Well, that's what's up. But yeah.
I mean, Mike can tell me.
Oh, okay. She said, "Tell her."
Oh no! Do you want to tell? Do you want to tell me? Now I'm scared.
Dun, 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 dun.
I'll say, no. Mine's just it's easy. It's not like anything like you don't already know. Sure, you have a strong personality, but I think that's one of the things I really like about you. So I won't say that, but I'll say that I think that. Oh, I think you're not as patient with the world as you would like the world to be with you.
Mm. Okay.
Wow. You know, I feel the same with you, Sharonda. I don't really have the same. But, you know, I think for me, I've always, this bit of intimidation I've had, I guess from you. And I think just because of, you know, Mike is, share like childhood stories, and I think that just made me a little afraid. But you know what?
Did he tell you about that time?
That one time.
About you fighting other people, about you beating up other people.
I can see my childhood and teenage, my adolescent stories could be scary, and I will admit, you know, that I feel like I do carry a lot of aggression still, you know, some levels of aggression, and I'm constantly like, okay. But, you know, I'm trying to figure out ways to break. When you say you're intimidated, I feel like I get that a lot, and I haven't really developed strategies for breaking that, you know, that impression or that, you know, idea of me down. So I haven't yet managed that. Because I feel like when I'm overly, when my guards are all the way down, that then somebody tries it, and then I have to be like, oh, you know, let me grab all my, you know, weapons.
Right.
But maybe Mike should stop telling those stories, you know?
Well, no, it was, the most of them were, like, about you being independent. I'm not talking about the ones where, you know, you weren't Rampage and Rambo.
Oh, my.
I meant, like you know, like the kids at my school, like that kind of stuff.
Okay.
You know you don't play. And I might have told, you know, a joy or two story.
Yeah, I feel like, and correct me if I'm wrong, Anshay, that part, maybe it's my lack of filter, or, you know, I feel like I'm much better now, but also I can be pretty confrontational. If something happens, I have a very difficult time not addressing it. So that can be really intimidating, because it's like, if a person feels like I can't make a mistake around her because she's just going to, you know, go for the gusto.
Well, you know, I also wonder just because, like, I think you and Mike are similar in many ways. And what I mean by that is that you both are, you both have a dominant type personality. And so usually when guys, when I'm around guys who are that way, I usually have a way of, manipulating the situation. And with women, you can't do that. And I already know that if you cross a woman who has a dominant personality, you know, it's going to be, like, be prepared for some serious consequences. And I don't think you really get that from guys. Like, it's already expected what you're going to get. But I think from women, it's hard for me to expect what's going to happen. So I think that also kind of allows me to feel somewhat intimidated as well. That makes sense?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm just double checking.
Yeah, I mean, strange enough, I think I feel the same way when working with men and women. I feel like I never know when I'm going to do something wrong with a woman, and when I do, there's never any coming back. But with men, they are more tolerant of me. They bounce back from whatever aggressions I do easier, and they value different things in me. So I feel like I'm almost the same way with that. Like, I'm less intimidated with men. And it's not because I'm a woman and think that I can use my sexuality, but there's something more manageable. I don't want to upset a bunch of women listening, but, you know, when I cross a woman, I feel like I never come back from that. So, yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
Well, that's powerful. I'm glad y'all two got to work out your differences.
Yeah, that's all right. Well,
if you would like to work out your differences at home.
This has been like family therapy.
I know. It reminds me of that show with You and Mom where we thought it was going to be like more, I guess, like upbeat and less intense.
Yeah.
And I still haven't listened to that again, but I remember it being really intense, that first show. So check out that first show if you want to know what intense looks like.
But I want to be those type of dialogues that should happen when working together, that you have to begin to just be more transparent around. This is why I just don't like when you do this. You know, maybe it'll get the person to want to switch it up or just to kind of make some levels of changes.
I think that with family that there becomes a disregard for process, period. And I think that's why, you know, like, nobody ever just scratches their head and say, hey, let's sit down and have a powwow, you know, around what this is or whatever. But that it's easy to go right into confrontation because it's the safest place to be. It's because most arguments with somebody you have a history with are they're wrong and you're right and y'all don't understand each other's perspective. And so it's so easy to get manipulated to fall right back into that, you know, one-up each other kind of situation.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that if you build in a regard for the process, wanting things to work out, then I think that you can figure out how to have. And Rhonda, you and I, like we did that recently.
Yeah. With the rules, kind of rules of engagement, or you know, how to work through conflict, or you know, just an agreed boundary.
Right.
Right.
That's why I think that you gotta have those conversations in the end to say, like, this is what I may not like, or this is what I don't like about you, or you know, when you do this, this gets on my nerves, and working with you, this is my challenge when working with you. I don't know, I just like that. Those things have to kind of get out there so that we can be able to know what we have to do differently.
I think it's a great and beautiful transition to, you know, sort of this close of a conversation where I just want to be able to read off the three pieces of advice that we typically tuck away in our articles. And so so the first one is, and I'll read it, I guess y'all can go together too, is act like you know. So we know that working with family is difficult, and so act like you know just means that if you know your family, if you know who they are, if you know that they throw dirty punches, if you know that they know all your secrets, then you want to plan for that ahead of time instead of waiting until y'all arguing in front of the customer, you know, to decide to do that. And Rhonda, you and I, we've gotten to workshop arguments, remember?
Yeah, we have.
And even with Lewis. So, you know, it would have been, like, but we were really young and nobody had really prepared us to kind of be in the public in that way.
Oh,
right.
Lord.
Right. Well, and all three of us have very strong personalities. Like, so, you know, there was no backing down.
Yeah, I really think it's a rare combination you find three really strong personalities together because usually, you know, they find people who are not as strong. So, I'll say the second one.
So the second one that we have is nurture talents and wait for readiness. So pretty much that everyone has a gift, but not everyone's ready to use that gift. And so pretty, you know, if you just use someone, if you send someone who's just not ready, go with that feeling. And it doesn't mean that you have to give them. It just means that you have to teach the family member how to fish. It's more around that whole thing around that we're just going to come to the table with limited capacity, and we have to just help support each other just to kind of build one another up.
Because
some of us got more, you know, better skills or more, you know, expertise in one area than the other. So, yeah.
That's true. And the last one is keep the dream alive, which is self-explanatory, but I'll let Sharonda speak more about that.
Okay, so that's keep the dream alive. So you're going to want to give up. I mean, it is self-explanatory when you have those conflicts, when you have those bumps in the road, it's sometimes easy to say, well, you know what, forget it. I don't even want to do this. I don't want to be a part of this anymore. But remaining committed to the main goal and working through those issues, using steps one and two to help navigate through those bumps and those conflicts. It's not going to be easy, but most things that are worth it are not necessarily easy. So learning how to, you know, stay focused, keep your eye on the prize.
Right. That's beautiful. Couldn't have said it better myself. So, you know, you're going to have these conflicts, but we want you to feel supported in the process. We all want to feel supported in the process, so we just thought it was important to have a conversation about that.
And as Candy Bird said tonight on Real Housewives of Atlanta, there's power in numbers. So imagine if we all came together and brought our skills together. What great work would
that
be doing?
Like,
and, you know, how much power
what are some of
the
famous families that work together? Like some, not just the Kardashians.
Like the Osmonds, the Jacksons. I'm so dated, I'm showing my age.
Who is the Living Color people? What's their name?
Oh,
the
Wayans.
The Wayans.
The Smiths. The nose. Well,
the nose.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They keep each other tied and everything.
Kelly Rowland's in it. Yeah, include her.
That's true.
Yeah.
I mean, and they all talk about the need to be able to break off and do your own thing or come back. But you know, I think it's about having respect for the group. And I also just think that
and people aren't jumping out of their talent. So the mom ain't trying to teach choreography. You know what I'm saying? Like she's sticking on what she does.
They all know what their skills are. So this was really, really nice, and we really thank you all for tuning in to tonight's True Talk Teaching Intimacy in Color. We hope you all had some great took home some tips that we provided in
the
article.
You are?
I am up next week.
Okay, good.
And I look forward to writing and posting that. But so please tune in to with us next Sunday at 11 p.m., and we are going to be live in effect. I know we've been so tired this weekend, so I know next weekend it's going to be full. It's going to be crazy.
Well, even though
you'll be away in
Baltimore. That's right.
So, yeah.
I'll probably be around to recording it.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you all have a wonderful Sunday. We thank you for joining us. So this is what's going on about family business.
So I'm Auntie Hall Everett.
I'm Michael Everett.
And I'm Lady Rhonda.
Ah! And we thank you for tuning in. Stop being intimacy and color.
Well, you're not just alive,
but we are living, okay? And I'll...